I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a good friend. Sue Ann Camfield is on the podcast this week. She is Director of Women's Ministries at Christ Church of Oak Brook. She previously served as Development Director for CARIS, which is a nonprofit counseling organization, and as an assistant editor and publicist at InterVarsity Press. She's written for a whole host of online publications and in-print publications. But today I'm talking with her because she has written a book. It is a memoir, and it's called The Sound of a Million Dreams, Awakening to Who You Are Becoming. And if that doesn't pique your interest, especially if you're in the midst of growing in Christ, thinking about self-discovery and how that intersects with your spiritual life, well, you're going to be glad you downloaded the podcast. So, Sue Ann, welcome.
Thanks, Anita. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, it's fun to have you because I know you and because I've seen this book develop over the course of a number of years. You and I were in a writer's group together and I attended church together. And so it's kind of fun to be able to see you through the process and to watch this dream come to fruition. And I'm going to even ask, you know, what's it like when you get that big box at your front door and you open it and there is the hard copy book you've worked on for literally, I think I read in some of your press materials, the process might have even been 10 years or so.
I know, it's been a long time. And so I have to say, you know, I've had the privilege of journeying alongside people like you and other writer friends, and everyone experiences, I think, writing a book and receiving a book differently. And so a lot of people said, you know, gosh, you work on a book so long, by the time that it actually shows up at your doorstep and you get the physical copy in your hand, it almost feels anticlimactic. You know, it's kind of like you've been working on this thing and yeah, here it is. And I got the phone call, actually. I have the privilege of living close to my publisher. And so I got a phone call that said, hey, your book is here at the warehouse. Do you want to come pick up some copies? And I happened to just be right down the street at a coffee shop. And I said, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And I ran over there and was greeted with open arms and hugs. And it was a celebration. And I held that thing in my hand. And I thought, okay, all of those people are wrong. This is way better than I ever imagined it would be.
That's great. I love it. Well, you know, anyone listening, I mean, think dream come to fruition, right? Yeah. And there you have it. And, you know, just fill in the blank, whatever that dream is. But let's talk about dreams. You know, let's kind of launch into what you're talking about. And I personally, I'll just say, I really like the memoir genre. It's been something that I've greatly enjoyed. Even back when I wrote What Women Tell Me, it was not called a memoir, but that's really what it was. And I love that genre because we learn through someone else's life, someone else's dream, and it helps ignite our own, I think. And that's what I believe can happen to anyone that reads The Sound of a Million Dreams. I think their own dream can be ignited or reignited. Maybe that's the case. One of my questions for you is, how do you sustain a dream over the long haul? What does it look like? What does a dream sound like? And how do you sustain it?
That's a great question. You know, it's hard to sustain it. Let me just say that first and foremost. It's not easy. We all have a zillion things happening in our lives on any given day, in any given month, in any given year, regardless of where we're at in our lives. And so for me, that means raising a family right now, and it means working full time, and it means having a husband who has a demanding job, and we have all kinds of things going on, and yet there is this place inside of me that I feel like God has specifically spoken to that has told me to pursue this dream, even though I didn't always know exactly how to articulate it or what to call it, but to keep on with that dream. And I think the first thing that people have to do is pay attention to those nigglings and those nudgings and the things that wake them up at night or the things they daydream about during the day. And even if that's in the midst of chaos, you know, I think we know when there's something that's kind of stirring inside of us. And so we have to pay attention to that. And we don't just have to pay attention to it once or twice. We have to pay attention to it over and over and over again over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And we have to continually ask God, what are you saying to me with this? You know, I keep coming back to these places where I'm feeling this, or I'm hearing this, or I'm experiencing these things that I feel pulled to. And so what are you saying to me about this? And how do I take a step in that direction, even when I'm not exactly sure what direction that is and what it means? You know, there's a famous quote that says, you know, just do the next thing. And I think when we are thinking about our dreams, sometimes we have the tendency to think, what is that thing way out there that I'm supposed to be doing in 10 years or 20 years? Or what is the big goal? And I think we don't always know that. And so what we do have to do is do the next thing that God is asking us to do, to persist in that, and trust that even when we don't know exactly the path that that's going to lead us on, that it's still a direction that we're supposed to go.
Yeah, boy, that's saying a mouthful there. And I think it is hard to kind of hang on. And I'm even thinking about your own dream as I was reading your book. You know, obviously it came out of your own journey, the book did. And you were wrestling with these feelings, or I should say you were feeling this call, even a strong call, but not always being able to identify it, which you were just alluding to that fact, you know, not always knowing. I think that's the hardest part. I mean, how do you keep going when you're not quite sure? Were you sure, okay, if I just spend time journaling about it, thinking about it, God will bring it more into focus?
Yeah, you know, I think there definitely is a trust factor there, that when you believe that there is a dream inside of you, or that God is calling you to something, that you have to always come back to, is God who he says he is, and does he do what he says he's going to do? And so coming back to that again and again, and just believing and trusting that, okay, if God wants me to do this, I'm going to trust that he is who he says he is, and I'm going to keep moving with him. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, Anita, there have been so many times throughout this journey, and I probably have a fraction of them in the book, where I did want to quit. I just wanted to give up. I thought I made it up. I thought that I was crazy. I thought that, you know, I'm out of my mind to think that this pull and this call that I'm feeling is actually real. But I think every time that I felt like I wanted to give into that, something would shift. God would bring someone into my life, or I would read something, or usually it was someone that he would bring into my life to speak directly into this place that I call the stirring throughout the book, that just says, no, you know what, you're on the right course, keep going. And when we believe that God speaks to us in that way, I think that's what gives us the courage to take just one more step.
And your calling, eventually you did identify it as this dreamer calling to write and to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know that initially, or was that over a period of time that was discovered as well?
You know, I did know that initially.
Okay.
That, and I'm not saying everybody has to know that initially.
Right.
For me, it was very specific. And I would say it wasn't like all of a sudden God said, do this, and I knew it. But it happened, that piece of it happened over a short period of time, where I do think I had kind of a little bit of a mysterious experience that I knew that was specifically what I was supposed to be doing. I just didn't know how to do it, or how to get there, or what it looked like, or in what context it looked like. And like you mentioned, life gets in the way and life is busy. And so how do I keep putting that out in front of me? And, you know, while I was working at things that weren't necessarily related directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm even thinking, even in working in things or fields that weren't directly related, because I remember when you were hired actually to a Christian publishing house, and I thought, oh, this will help the dream come to fruition, you know, sooner. And but not necessarily so. You went on then to work somewhere else. And so I think that's the interesting thing. We don't know the path. I mean, we definitely know. I think living out our Christian lives, we don't know the path, because so often it takes a very winding road. But you made a statement just a second ago. You said, you know, life gets in the way. And I think we also have to do a reframing even of that phrase, because I think it actually is life getting in the way that draws us, or maybe more conforms us, to the image of Christ. It's actually a part of the path, but we all say that, though. Life got in the way. But I think it's, you know, it's God using whatever you want to call that, life getting in the way to shape us, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's the interesting part, that that sometimes that feels like, well, I think sometimes we get discouraged by it and it feels like a detour. And I don't know if you felt that when all of a sudden you were leaving working at a Christian publisher. Talk about that. Leaving to go to a new kind of work. Did you have this sense that, oh, this dream is either going to be over or it's shifting? Or what did you feel at that time?
Yeah, I felt maybe I was wrong, that maybe I made the wrong decision about the path that I was supposed to take. But the interesting thing was, it was also very clear to me that I was supposed to leave that job and accept this new job. It's actually kind of an interesting story in that I was praying very specifically. I had a boss that just was so kind to me in terms of helping me try to figure out this wrestling I was feeling and what was the right fit for me. And we did a performance review, actually, and he offered in my performance review, he said, you know, if you want to explore this a little bit further, I would love to just sit down and have coffee with you and kind of talk about the highs and lows of not just this job, but your vocational life. And so I took him up on that offer, and he and I went and sat in a Starbucks. And he had me do kind of an examine of my vocational life. So where did you feel like God was most using you? Where did you feel, what were things that were most draining? Where were you finding the most life? And what I did through that experience was come back to these areas of where I felt like God was calling me to use my gifts in this area of writing and speaking specifically. And at the end of that meeting, I knew I was in the wrong place. And I joke with him now that, you know, he told me to quit my job, which he did not. But I got to this place at the end of that and said, you know what, I think I need to go in a different direction. But I don't know exactly what that is. And I started to pray a one sentence prayer. And I said, God, use my voice in a nonprofit to advance your kingdom was what I said. And 4 months later, I got a job offer through another friend of mine that offered me exactly that, to use my voice on behalf of a nonprofit that I believed in. But the interesting thing was, and I did that for the next 4 years, and I was absolutely certain that God called me to that position, but it still didn't meet this deeper place inside of me, because I think, as you said, I was viewing these things as they were getting in the way of my calling rather than God was actually using them to push me in the direction of my calling.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, you know, and I think it speaks to how we need to live with eyes wide open and with this real sensitivity to the presence of God, being aware of his presence in all things, even the unexpected, or asking that question, okay, God, are you in this, or where do I see you in this, when it's a direction that we're not expecting? And we know, you know, we're talking about God here, the great mystery,
you know?
The unknowable, you know, we know him maybe. I always look at my little fingernail, and I just think that's how much I know of God. And I'm sure that's way more than what I really know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I love people's stories for, you know, in that sense too, because it gives us hope and we see the sometimes odd path that God takes us on, or what we think is kind of odd. Yeah. People that pick up The Sound of a Million Dreams, you know, what are you kind of hoping they might connect to, or, you know, how might they connect to that, to the message?
Well, I would hope there's two things. And one you alluded to at the beginning when you introduced me is that I hope that in me telling my story and me telling how I have navigated this feeling of calling and living out your dreams in the busyness of life, that they would find themselves in that story. And that they would see themselves in a way that not necessarily see themselves in my story, but that it would stir something inside of them that would cause them to reflect on their own journey in a way that they start asking those questions of God, where are you moving in my life? Where have you been moving in my life? What do I need to pay attention to that you're doing? And how do I follow you through that? Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, would be my biggest hope, is that it would just cause people to sit down and to reflect a little bit about those things. I think the second thing I would hope for is, you know, we have been talking so much already about what I call, you know, all the doing, you know, yeah, so God, yeah, what do you want me to do? And what kind of jobs should I take? And what steps should I take? And what is it, where is it that you want me to end? And I think the thing that I have learned more than anything else through this process is that God is not so much concerned about anything that we're doing as much as he's concerned about the person that we're becoming. And what I hope that readers hear loud and clear is that as we follow the doing, the stirring, as I call it, as we take these steps in the direction that we think we're supposed to go, that we actually open our hands and hold to the direction and the specifics of what we're supposed to do very loosely. Because in the midst of all of that doing, what God is primarily, first and foremost, doing is a work inside of us. And that work is making us become more like him and become the person that he wants us to be for his glory, so that everything that we do is really about who we're becoming.
All right. I love that line of thinking. And I think that's all about life gets in the way. It's not about, it's about who we're becoming. But I think we often believe that we are failures because we haven't, quote, arrived at what you talk about in the book, you know, what we want to be when we grow up as we're moving toward that, and can have that deep question, even if we've not said that question actually out loud to someone in our sphere. I think it's often still inside us, and the older we get, we have this sense of, or we can have this sense of failure because we don't think we've arrived at whatever that is. And I also think that that is reinforced culturally and in the church culture, societal, the broader culture, and also in the church culture. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for naming that.
And then how do we fight against it? How do we, you know, how do we trust? And maybe that's it, just what it is. Maybe it's just leaning back on the breast of Jesus. You know, I'm thinking of even we're moving toward Lent, and I think of the upper room picture, you know, how they lean back and the disciple Jesus loved is kind of leaning on his breast. And, you know, how do we get that sense of that Jesus does not think we are failures, that, you know, but we've got to stay the course, whatever that is.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think any time that we are focusing our identity and our worth on the things that we achieve, we need to take a big old time out as believers and say, okay, I need to shift some of my thinking. I need to shift where I'm finding my identity right now, because we know rationally that our identity does not lie in anything that we do or anything that we achieve. Yet at the same time, and that's this paradox and this mystery, and I think the juxtaposition that is happening in my own journey, that at the same time, there are some things that I really believe God calls us to do and that he wants us to do. But I think that's the beauty of holding it in tension with this becoming. So we have the doing on one track and we have the becoming on the other track. And we're going to walk along these same tracks that are parallel, that, you know, crisscross, that interweave with each other. And we're always going to be walking along both of those and say, okay, Lord, what are the things that you are asking me to do? But I'm holding that intention always with the person that you're asking me to become. And so this was actually my my mentor and friend, Adele Calhoun, actually was the first person to talk to me about this. And I remember her and I going on a walk in the woods one day, and I was just kind of spilling all of this stuff about, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, and feeling like a failure, because I felt like, even at 30 some years old, feeling like I was watching everybody else achieve and everybody else, you know, move down that path quicker than I was, and feeling that failure and that shame. And I just wanted her to tell me, what am I supposed to do? And she looked at me, and she was the first person to say, you know what, Sue Ann, maybe instead of asking what you're supposed to do, you need to ask who you want to become. Mm-hmm. And that question just went straight to the core of my, you know, heart and my soul. Because actually, I was a little frustrated when she first asked it, because I thought, you're not listening to me. Like, are you not hearing all these things I want to do? And you're talking to me about who I want to become? Like, who has time to think about that? But again, as we go down both of these tracks of, God, you're calling me to do some things, but yet at the end of the day, what you really care about is who you want me to become. And I think the more that we can live into that piece, like you said, of leaning back on the breast of Jesus and saying, Lord, ultimately at the end of the day, this is not about anything I achieve, but it really is about, am I more of a reflection of you? Are the fruits of the Spirit evident in my life? Am I reaching to the people around me and being a reflection of who you are to this world that's broken up and messy? And regardless of what I'm doing, if I'm doing that in the midst of it, then I'm doing the right things. And so I think it's this constant letting go of the achievement side of us and just coming back to that place of reflecting God's glory as his children and the person he wants us to become. And that is a daily experience. That is a daily struggle. So I don't think we ever get to this place where we arrive and say, oh, I got it. I no longer care about that stuff that I'm trying to do. Yeah. But yet it puts it more into perspective so that we do hold more loosely to it. Mm-hmm. And then those feelings of failure or whatever it may be, when they start to creep in, we go back to the person that we know we are in Christ and remind of ourselves of that. And if we're living out that person, how can we really be failing at anything?
Yeah, I love that. I think that age doesn't always equal maturity, but it can, certainly. And I think it's been interesting as I've aged to see a shift in my broader purpose. I mean, certainly, I'm not doing a daily radio program anymore that had a large audience, but that deeper desire to speak one-on-one with women and do spiritual direction. And I think it's like the reality, the truth of that message, that less is more. I think it's more of the being, not the doing. And yeah, it's very interesting to me how that happens. And some of that's age, but not all of it, certainly.
Well, yeah. And I think the other thing that happens, I mean, as we get older, we realize, like, are we ever really going to achieve everything that we want to achieve? Is there ever going to be a day where we sit back and go, okay, now I feel like I've done it all? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that will ever happen.
Right.
And so the sooner we realize that, it's probably the better.
Yes. Preach on.
That's right.
That's exactly true. What about the person? I'm thinking about a friend of mine who struggles to dream, and I don't know if that's maybe a background of disappointments or shattered dreams. I think most of us, if we'll be honest, have had some of those shattered dreams, or that dream that we felt was planted in us by God that, you know, just has not ever come to fruition, or just doesn't seem like he's moving us toward it anymore, or, you know, I don't know. And that shattered dream could come in the form of a failed marriage. It could come in the form of a job loss, of a medical diagnosis. You know, anyone can fill in that blank, what it means to them. But what about that person who's afraid to dream, maybe even afraid to dream again because of shattered dreams?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is that that's hard.
Yeah.
And there's no good answers for when you are in that place or feel like that is your place in life. that there's nothing I will say to say, oh, okay, well, don't worry. God still has things in store for you. That sounds like a trite answer that minimizes or trivializes pain that people walk through, because I think broken dreams is one of the most difficult pain and griefs that we will actually walk through. And so I want to be really sensitive to how I answer this question, because I don't think there is a great answer, but I'm glad you brought it up, because I just actually have a friend of mine who is reading this book, and she sent me a text and said something very similar. And she said, I just don't know if God has it in me to dream anymore. Oh. And it breaks my heart, because maybe our dreams aren't these big and grand things that we're supposed to achieve or do. And maybe there really has been a loss of what we thought would become of our lives that's not.
And I'll even add into that, even as I'm hearing you say that, it makes me think about what our broader society has labeled as important dreams.
Right.
As opposed to, and so we buy into that I can't, my dream can only be important if it is releasing a book or, you know, that kind of thing, that's hard, because that's what's held up for us. When in fact, I think of the dream of giving birth. I think of, you know, I have one child and only one. And I think, wow, you know, if that's all that had ever happened in my life today, I can look back and go, that is totally enough. You know, but in that moment, way back, I didn't see that, you know, and so asking God to change our perspective, I kind of derailed you in the middle of your response, but it just brought up these feelings of how we buy into something that's not really necessarily of God to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that we certainly let society tell us what is important in those dreams, and what is a good dream, and what's big enough. And I think to people who have been in that space of just kind of losing some of that hope, I would say, you know, God is never, he never stops working in our lives, and he never stops speaking to the deep places inside of us about who we want to become and what our lives are supposed to look like. And so we need to pay attention and listen to that and keep stepping into those places, because God is always speaking to us. And really at the core of this book, it's not about those big dreams.
Yes.
It really is about the places that God stirs inside of us.
Yes.
And we serve a God of hope and a God of love and a God who wants good things for our lives, and not in the way, I'm going to be careful how I say good things, because I think that's even a cultural lie on what we label as good. But God wants his goodness in our lives, and he works for his good. And so when we listen to that and step into those places, that's what can give us a little bit of hope about where he's going. He's never going to stop working in our lives.
Yeah. I love that. I think I feel like almost every answer you've pointed back in a beautiful way, not always direct way, but to our identity, you know, where our identity lies. And I think that is a powerful message. I love that you just stated the core message of the book. And, you know, I think anyone grappling with dreams has to put that question front of them. You know, who do you want to become? Who is God leading you, moving you toward becoming? You know, is that the path we're on?
Yeah. And big. In the midst of that, always coming back to the good character of God.
Yes. Like, yes.
Who is God? And not only who does he say I am, but who is he? And he is a God of hope and a God of goodness and a God of mercy and a God of grace. Mm-hmm. And so keep coming back to that, not only who I am, but gosh, who is he? And can we keep holding on to the truth of who he is? Do we really believe that he is who he says he is? And I think when we can answer yes to that question, it settles some of these other things into place.
I just want to take a deep breath and kind of sit back and think about all that you've talked about here today, Sue Ann. Good stuff. Big congratulations on the fruition of this particular dream. And I'm just grateful that you had the time today to spend talking about this. Thanks for being with me.
Well, I couldn't be more thankful to be with you, Anita. Thanks for all the work that you do and for all the lives that you've touched through following your own calling.
Thank you. And for those who listen regularly to the podcast, some of you know from time to time I give you an opportunity to give to the podcast. You can write a check and mail it. You can do that. It's 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. Or, yep, I've come up to modern times, everyone. I'm on PayPal. So the email address to use there is producer@anitalustria.com. And I'll just end by saying I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.